tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. It's Freak Out Friday, so that means we have our political roundtable of Ken Jagabowski, Eric Elk, and Dave Lundy. We also have another episode of Binge and Uncork with our good friend Susan Dannenberger from Dannenberger Family Vineyards, where she pairs a nice glass of wine with your favorite TV show. And stick around for What's That From, where we take on a scene from your favorite movie. But now, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in Chicago, the one and only Patty Vasquez.
Night downtown Chicago. We are on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We hope that you are happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are tonight. If you have to miss the rest of the show at any point, you want to know what else happened, don't forget every show we have is podcast on iTunes. You can go to iTunes, search for Patty Vasquez or Pretty Late, WGN Radio. And we also, you know, the easiest place to get it might be my Facebook page. You can go to Patty Vasquez Pretty Late. You can search all those words, you will find the podcast, and we encourage you to like our page. We'd love to hear from you. And tonight is a moment of reflecting on the incredible career of Patrick Sharp. And for those of you who watch the game, you know that there was a huge standing ovation for him. One last lap around the ice. His parents were at the game, and an emotional evening for a player that this city absolutely adores, and we know that he calls Chicago home. And on behalf of WGN Radio and all the fans, we want to thank Patrick Sharp for such an amazing career and for everything you've done. I know it was a gut-wrenching season for so many people, and you never want to see a great player have to leave on a game that we lose, but it's going to be meaningless compared to the career he's had, to the love he's gotten from the fans, to the teammates he's played with, and again, so many great memories with Patrick Sharp. So we are glad he came back to Chicago. I know when they traded him a few years ago, it was like, no, and then when he came back, it was amazing. So it's one of those things when you see such a magnificent player on the ice, and you just know that it's never going to be the same, and nothing can be, but we're glad that he spent most of his career right here in Chicago. And we are, you know, it's a great weekend for sports. It's weird because baseball obviously in full swing, and you know, but it's cold and it's snowing in Chicago, and it's hard to get so excited when there's snow still coming down. I was at Sox Park yesterday, and it was just too chilly. Now, Michael, will you be going to the games? Are you only going to go to the warm games? Is that why you avoided the home opener yesterday?
I don't know anything besides cold Sox games, to be honest, but I'm looking forward. Yes,
the better tickets.
Yeah,
the part of it.
One of my first memories of a baseball game was being at Sox Park or Comiskey Park, and seeing a lady in a full-on starfish-like onesie and sitting there waving two American flags. So I'm looking forward to seeing what it looks like when people are wearing shorts at the Sox game.
That'll be nice. Shorts. If there was one guy yesterday in front of us, it was me, Brian Noonan, Ernie, and Ben were all in the section along the first base line, mm-hmm. and the guy took off his shirt, and his girlfriend was writing, "Detroit sucks" in permanent marker. She had a Sharpie.
That's dedication right there.
Well, and it was funny because I mean, he got the whole section to start chanting, "Detroit sucks, Detroit sucks." You know, I guess hoping that they would get on television, get on the Jumbotron. But what was amusing to me was the conversation that began behind me. The guys were like, "Yeah, I don't know how he's going to get that off." Because, how are you going to get off your back? I mean, is she going to be there to help you out with that? Because she wrote on the front and back.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's going to come off eventually. It just wears off, doesn't it?
Yeah, they were more worried about his cleanliness than
right.
Detroit sucking, I suppose.
That's a weird moment in the stands when someone obviously is committing to trying to draw attention and show their team support,
mm-hmm.
and the guys are like, "Now, what would you use to get that off? Are you going to use like a lava soap or something? What do you I mean? Like, that's like nail polish remover is not good for that.
Yeah, don't come out with no Tide stick there.
That was really weird. Yeah.
Oh,
so, I don't know. Have you ever done anything like that? Have you ever like done body paint or done anything sort of
drew like a target on my stomach with a Sharpie?
Sure, whatever it is.
I think there was one
worn a
time.
Cheese grater on your head?
I have worn the I've worn the cheese head.
The cheese head.
My family's all from Wisconsin, so
okay.
Diehard Packer fans. But I do love my Bears. But I think the one time that I did the whole face paint thing was, this is so embarrassing.
Tell us.
I went, when I was young, do you remember when the women's gymnastic team was like taking over the world in, I think it was with Bella.
Was it with Carrie Strug when she landed on one foot and she hurt her ankle?
And Dominic
Luciano. I don't remember what we're talking about.
Yes. Dominic Dawes. I could list them off. But we went to go and see them at the Bradley Center in Milwaukee, and I painted an American flag on my face.
That's
when I
great.
Was like 12 years old.
I'm going to need pictures.
Oh,
I'm
going to
need some throwback pictures,
Mom,
throwback
Dad,
Thursday pictures of
no,
Michael Heidemann.
If that's that, if they exist, I hope that they never see the light of day.
We're going to need those pictures. Coming up after this break, we're going to check in with our favorite winemaker, Susan Dannenberger from Dannenberger Family Vineyards. She has watched the movie The Siege of Jadotville. It's a movie on Netflix, and it tells a story that many of us, I would say pretty much most of us, were not familiar with. And I want to see what she thought of the movie and what wine she pairs with it. And then we will give her an assignment for the next Binge and Uncork segment. More in a moment on 720 WGN. The Netflix film The Siege of Jadotville tells the story of an Irish commander and his battalion of 150 men as they withstand a siege by 3,000 Congolese troops led by French and Belgian mercenaries working for mining corporations. And I thought it would be an interesting recommendation or assignment, as it were, for our winemaker, Susan Dannenberger, for our segment, Binge and Uncork. It was a little bit different because we've done like these entire series, whether it's four seasons of Peaky Blinders or two seasons of The Crown, The Orange is the New Black, Jessica Jones. So how was it? I know we've done a comedy special before, Susan, but what did you think of The Siege of Jadotville?
Well, it was harder than I thought it would. You would think it'd be super easy because it's just a movie. But all those series, you know, you have this character development and time to kind of like get into the character and figure it out. I had to watch the movie three times because there's a lot going on.
I watched it twice in the same day. I watched it when I got home from work one night. I was like, it was St. Patrick's Day weekend, and I thought, you know, I've seen The Quiet Man, and I watched it again over St. Patrick's Day weekend, but I thought I want something else that tells a story of Irish heritage, the history of, piece of Ireland's history. And I came across this film, and I watched it, when I got home at, 3 in the morning, and I was so wired when I was done watching it that when my husband woke up at, 6, I was, sitting there, oh, my God, we got to watch this movie. So I went to bed, and when I woke up, we had our Irish dinner, and we watched The Siege of Jadotville. So I was the same way. There were things, and I wanted to watch with them. I wanted to see what they thought. Maybe I was crazy. Then I just got so drawn into this story, don't you think?
The battle scenes were fantastic.
Right.
They were the best part of the whole movie, actually. And I didn't know about the story.
Right.
So I'm thank you for bringing it to my attention. I had no idea. It was unsung heroes.
They really were, after World War II, and, there was such a scramble around the world, and in particular, this is where the materials came from for the nuclear bomb. So you have these mining companies that want to take advantage of what the natural resources are in Africa, and then the UN comes in and tries to prevent or at least stem the rising rivalries between parts of Africa, these mining companies. You have mercenaries coming in, and this battalion was pretty much, they were real, basically, it seemed as though their superiors had no problem sacrificing them in this pursuit of the minerals there.
Oh, yeah, and then they ended up going just old school, which I thought was, it took me a long time to really understand until the very end, and then I kind of got the whole thing, and I was like, oh, my gosh, they went old school with doing the old World War trenches to try to save themselves. I thought that was really brilliant, Sometimes the best new way is old way.
Right, I agree. And that's the thing is, and didn't you get this feeling, this battalion is being attacked over and over and over again by the mercenaries, by the Congolese troops. And don't you just keep thinking, what more could happen? And then you see a plane flying over them. You're like, no!
I didn't know the end. I didn't know that. Everyone was going to survive. So the whole time I'm like, oh no, who's going to die? Who's going to die? Because, you get involved in these characters and a lot of good actors were in this movie and I didn't even know about it. Oh no, fighting my teeth. just waiting to see who's going to be the one.
Now, did you know, now, Jamie Dornan, who is, a lot of people, I guess, know from 50 Shades of Grey, is an Irish actor who plays the lead character in this movie, and that was Commander, oh, I'm having a tough time now with the name of the commander, but it was Patrick, I have to look up for the name, but the commander's grandson is also one of the soldiers in the movie, by the way, which I thought was kind of a wonderful touch.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right?
It was weird to see him, you know, with his mustache. He looked so different. Yeah, it was like, wait, you used to play Christian Grey in another movie.
Yes.
Like very, totally different type of character, you know, very humble and also very, like, family-oriented, and we're all, I can do this together, and, you know, it was nice to see him have a totally different character.
Well, and it also, I thought there was an interesting few, there were a lot of interesting moments, but even, you know, every soldier has a different reaction, obviously, in the moment of an attack, of trying to survive, and as much as there was a lot of action, and you hardly had a chance to catch your breath before they're attacked again, there were these wonderful moments in between where you kind of get this feel for how each soldier was reacting, like the one soldier, the sniper, who basically said, you know, I enjoyed it, you know, and there there is that part of somebody who, you know, they realize that they're not only good at what they do, but they thrive on that moment of adrenaline and knowing what to do in that moment. It's a great movie. I just think it's well done, and it's, as you mentioned, it's something that we never heard of, and they were basically just cast aside in the history books.
I know, and then I still, even though it came out 2 years ago, why didn't I know about this? I feel like it should have been bigger.
If I were Netflix, I would have definitely timed this. I would have also made this a St. Patrick's Day movie. You know, this is there's a lot of Irish pride in this movie, because when these soldiers came home, as you saw in the movie, they were basically treated like cowards, and that they had failed in this mission rather than having survived this incredible ordeal. And had
I
been,
know, it reminded me of Vietnam. It was really sad. They come back and pretend like it didn't even happen.
Yeah,
I'm like, what they won? I don't understand.
what is wrong with these people? So tell me, what did you pair with the Netflix movie, The Siege of Jetteville?
I had to pick Paper Moon. I knew it was going to have to be a white wine.
Right.
Is it because
they were all hot and sweaty and it was sunny and miserable and you want something a little bit refreshing?
Yeah, it was that, and then just, you know, the Irish blokes. I just couldn't see them doing a big red.
That's true.
I knew, and it was hot, and it was, and then when they were going old school with the trenches, I'm like, yeah, it needs to be, you know, a dry white wine that you could just kind of enjoy and not think about and just kind of take in a sip and then watch the next part and kind of just feel. It was more about the movie pairing with the wine than the wine pairing with the movie, I guess. It was kind of interesting. The movie took precedence for me this time.
It did.
Like, oh my gosh. It was, you know, my wine was just an accompaniment there.
did you watch it with anybody in your family, having watched it three times? Did you crowd
anybody
else?
No, nobody thought it was interesting.
They watched it with you and they thought it wasn't interesting, or they wouldn't even watch it?
Yeah, they just thought it looked really boring. Yeah. I was like, no, it's really good. You want to watch it? I don't know. I liked it. The dogs watched it. You know, the fight scenes, they would be like, what is that, the noise? So the dogs liked that part.
Well, from you and me, I have to tell people that I highly recommend this movie. It's not even that long. It is something that you just go. There's so many frustrating moments. There is a little bit of justice in the sense that the way in which you mentioned they're able to meet this challenge. There are other things that you just want to go screaming into the night thinking about the injustice for these men. But finally, these men have been honored in Ireland. There are tributes to them. The book was written, the movie was made, but, you know, it still doesn't seem like enough for young men who went off in 1961 to do a job that they were commanded to do and were very nearly sacrificed. So, again, Susan Dannenberger has recommended the wine Paper Moon. Now, is this available on your website and at Binnie's or other places like that?
Yes, both places and in the tasting room.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And Rob has a question as well. Hey, Rob.
Hi, Susan. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Rob?
Not too bad. I saw on your Twitter feed that you shipped some wine over to France. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. My Cabernet Franc got invited to a competition that happens every year at the Concours International, the Cabernet competition. And so it's only Cabernets that can cook different Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon. And there's a couple white Cabernets. And so it will be being judged at the end of April. Last year I sent our 2013 and it got a bronze. So I'm hoping to do better. Only three United States wineries got medals last year.
Very nice.
Whoa.
Well, good luck.
Yes.
Good luck.
Good luck. And by the
thank
way,
you.
Rob, if you'd like a sip of the Paper Moon, we have a little bit of to taste for this segment. And
well, you just won't have to twist my
arm. Oh,
I love Dannenberger wine, so we're good there.
There you go. Now, I do have another, and I don't think there are as many. There are. I think there's just maybe two seasons of this series. There's a show called The Good Place. Have you watched this one yet?
No, you haven't picked a bad one yet. I have been engrossed in everything you guys have picked.
Well, this is completely different. This is originally an NBC series that does have at least the first season, perhaps the second season on Netflix. But it is a comedic take, a very unique perspective on the afterlife, starring Kristen Bell and Ted Danson.
I have seen the ads for it, but I have not watched it. Okay.
Yes, I think that you will enjoy it. Did you ever see the movie Defending Your Life? With it's Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep.
Mm-mm.
Well,
no.
Well, now
I'm doubly curious.
Well, let's watch this first, and then we'll talk about what sort of fictional take on the afterlife. Because it's an incredibly inventive show. There's so much humor. It's rich with these amazing characters, and you're kind of like, what's gonna happen next every single episode? So I'm curious to see what wine you will pair with this one. Again, everyone go to DannenbergerFamilyVineyards.com to find out where you can pick up a bottle of Paper Moon or any of the other incredible wines that Susan has. She is in New Berlin, Illinois, 12341 Irish Road. And again, remind us of your Instagram and social media accounts.
DFV Wines. And then mine is Stilettos in the Vineyard.
And by the way, we do have to get some wine out to Leslie Zemeckis. Just think that that's got to...
Oh, I know!
Yeah,
that I've been following her, she is so fun.
Yes. I have to get you guys together. Susan, have a great weekend, and we will talk to you on the next Binge and Uncork. Do you have any big events coming up that you want to let us know about before we let you go?
Just the usual Wine Rocks on Saturdays and Sundays.
Wine
sometimes.
Rocks!
And, you know, it's pruning time. I wish the winter would just go away. It just keeps hanging on.
I know.
Really messing up everybody's vibe.
Be gone, you damn winter. Susan's wines and vines need to thrive.
The vineyard needs sunshine. Let's go.
And the next time we talk, let's also talk about the breast cancer, the Susan G. Komen run that I'll be down in Springfield with you on May 19th?
May 19th, yep. Yes. You joined my team.
I joined the wine rack. Was that wine rack, right?
Wine Rack Pack, yeah.
Wine Rack Pack. Find her team online, donate, and join us if you're in the area. So I'm excited to do that with you. Thank you, Susan.
Thanks. Good night, you guys.
Good night. Be well. More after this on 720 WGN.
I'm freaking out, man. You are freaking out, man.
Apparently, one of my guests freaked out when he saw me at Sox Park on my social media. Yes, Eric Elk, I went to Sox Park. It is we are the flagship station for the Chicago White Sox, and it's baseball season. And it's a fun park. I used to go there a few times when I was a kid. My dad was a fan of the White Sox, so yes.
I'm just glad you're a fan of baseball.
Yes,
I'm glad you're a fan of baseball. We've been to Cubs games.
Yes,
I know what
many Cubs
fan you are.
Yes,
but I know you're more of a baseball fan.
Well, I'm definitely more of a Cubs fan. I love baseball, and it's been interesting. I did not belong there, Ken. I went to Cork and Kerry, and it was one of those moments where, like, I thought that, like, if anyone was playing a record, it would screech and everyone would stop and turn around and look at me. That's how out of place I felt.
And that's because of the Cubs connection for you.
I just didn't belong.
Well,
just a lot of Sox fan, like hardcore
Sox.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a huge Cubs fan, but I've been to a lot of Sox games. There are two kinds of fans in Chicago. There are Cubs fans who the only way they will be happy is for Sox fans, for the Sox to lose. Mm-hmm. By the way, there aren't a lot of those.
Right.
And there are Sox fans who the only way they're going to be happy is for the Cubs to lose. There are a lot of those.
Right.
But then there are those like you and me who are like, hey, it's Chicago baseball. We just want them to do well.
Yeah, I root for both.
I root
for
both.
But then again, I was born and raised in Detroit, so what difference does it make? But I do like enjoy both teams.
There was a lot of yelling at Detroit Sox yesterday.
Oh, I was very happy.
I ended up going to the movies,
and as the movie's starting at 7 o'clock, I'm looking at my phone, I'm going, they just got three runs! They just tied in the ninth!
Let's catch up on some breaks here and find out what movie you saw. And we don't need to talk about the Sox being beaten by the Detroit Tigers.
It was a great day because the Sox lost and the Cubs won.
Okay. No, the Cubs lost
yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
Oh, today. The Sox didn't play today.
Yeah. No, okay. Off day.
That was convenient. Yeah. More to this on 720 WGN. Joining the conversation and responding to my query as to how many of you had to do group projects. You know, this is interesting because the point that this teacher makes is that, so they say they're a retired teacher. Group projects became a requirement in the early 90s when employers across the nation complained that we were graduating students not fit for employment. One of the complaints was that their newly hired employees did not work well on teams. So I don't know that, but here's the question, right? So I understand that, and that makes sense, that you want to let people know, like, there's always going to be somebody. I guess the lesson here that I hope Griffin walks away from is there's always going to be a jerk, is what he's learning. Not necessarily how to work well with other people. He's learning there's always going to be that jerk on your team that you...
At work, in life.
Always. Yeah, and I remember being in eighth grade, and one of my teachers, it was a bit of a tussle I got into with another girl, and I do mean that in a physical sense. But this girl went out of her way, like, she just hated me, like, threw me down on the locker room floor and sat on me. And, this was it. But my teacher's response, not that girl was violent towards me, but that I should get used to there being people in the world that didn't like me. So that was the lesson from my teacher, was that. So I'm kind of glad that Griffin, in a less violent, less personal way, is learning that there are jerks out there.
How do you think Donald Trump would do in a group project?
I'm guessing that he would throw people down and sit on them. I'm guessing he is a, let's call her Carrie.
I think he'd show up on the day of presentation and, having not done much work, he'd move right to the front and start taking... Talk over everybody.
Well, he's doing a group project. He's running the United States of America, and his group project has one he has one team player who's being very strange. Now, we keep getting these snippets and bits that people are learning about. Let's say it's Ben Carson and a $31,000 buffet table.
It was his wife's fault.
Yeah. But the Scott Pruitt, who is the head of the EPA, who believes that he is in dire danger, he believes that there are people out to get him. He has the largest security team of anybody on the in the cabinet. I believe he fired one of his Secret Service agents because they wouldn't let him. He wanted them to drive with the lights flashing, so that agent has been reassigned.
And the siren going, but also
which is not what they do.
So that he could run
red lights.
Wanted
him to take a special car,
right?
That you would take into like a war zone. He wanted to use this special car.
The kinds of cars that we use for our men and women who are in dangerous combat zones, and hopefully they aren't.
Or even like the diplomats, sometimes when they have those armored cars and things like that.
In other countries.
In like Libya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay.
But Pruitt, I mean, Pruitt's justification for flying first class or requesting to fly, exploring flying net jets or flying private or military, is that people were being mean to him when he flew coach.
Because they would recognize him
and say, please stop destroying our planet.
And anybody recognize it? Michael Heidemann, you're a well-educated young
Mike
man.
Heidemann.
You're a well-educated young man. You are staying up on current events.
Mm-hmm.
Should you walk through let's say you're walking through the plane and someone's putting their overhead bag, their bag in the overhead carry, area. Mm-hmm. And they turn toward you, and they're a well-dressed man, you know, maybe in his 50s or 60s. Would you be able to spot him as the head of the EPA?
Not in a million years.
I'm just saying. I mean, there aren't that many people.
I would.
I would not.
Oh, I would, and I would give him a piece of my mind, absolutely.
Would you really?
Oh, for sure.
Why don't you just email him?
Because he wouldn't see my email. He would have 27 layers between me and the email.
I don't know if I could go. Like, I've met Governor
Bonner. I wouldn't walk up to him and punch him. But
No. But you would tell him what you thought about his policies?
Oh, for sure.
Eric, yeah. Are there people that you
would
disagree with?
I would raise questions. I would ask him questions that he clearly would not know the answer to.
Yeah, so as all this is going on, I think there's an interesting contrast. There was just a story today in the New York Times on Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska. And in that story, it talked about the reporter traveled with her, and she talked about how she purposely always flies coach, even though that's kind of a flight to go from Washington to Alaska, purposely, so she actually uses that time to interact with some of her constituents
right.
on the plane
mm-hmm.
who are asking her positions on things and talking to her. I find it kind of interesting. The other thing that I think is interesting is the fact that Pruitt is still in his post. When you go back and listen to a interview he did in February 4th of 2016 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, his quote was, "I believe that Donald Trump in the White House will be more abusive to the Constitution than Barack Obama," and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, it wow. is amazing. But the thing is, Pruitt has been like the one shining light for the Koch brothers in this administration, because he's systematically destroying the EPA, which has created difficulty for the Koch brothers and their various polluting ways and their various companies. And like a lot of right wingers love Pruitt, because he has taken this agenda on to dismantle decades, 40 years of environmental policy in this country. And he's
including
done
targets for emissions, lowering emissions over the next couple of decades.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Pruitt is doing things like allowing for chemicals to pollute our air and our water.
Did no one see
he's
Aaron Brockovich?
Bad dude.
Did no one see that movie?
Yeah. Well, Ken and I actually have a lot of...
We have a lot to talk about.
We'll leave that.
Involved in the Aaron Bockovich thing, Dave and Ken. I wouldn't call them right wingers. I'd call them anti-planet people. Really, they're anti-planet.
Well, I don't think that. I think Eric Elk as a Republican would say that you have concerns about the environment. And I mean,
hey, there was a day where the Republicans, especially out west, led the charge on environmental stuff.
Right, because
they were ahead of the Democrats.
It's important for farming. It's important for hunting. It's important for the preservation of the kinds of places that Teddy Roosevelt fought for all over this country.
Absolutely.
In the
70s, when I was coming up, I in early 80s, it was the Republicans were the environmental leaders in this country.
Well, the EPA was created by Richard Nixon.
Correct.
Of course, there was a right-leaning Supreme Court that also was a deciding factor in Roe v. Wade. So I don't know. Things change all the time.
It was also a Chief Justice Berger, conservative Chief Justice Berger, who believes that the Second Amendment has been completely bastardized by the NRA and the crazies in the last 20 years, and that he was very comfortable with the way that the Second Amendment was interpreted for 200 years.
Do you think that both parties, well, I guess this is obvious, but both parties suffer from the extremists having the loudest voices and therefore being able to dominate. Right now, it's Trump and a lot of his supporters who really want everything at all costs that speak to their agenda, which is immigration and pro-life pro-life, pro-guns. And Democrats are suffering from having not really even knowing who their leaders are. We all kind of have an idea of what Democrats stand for, but there isn't anybody really putting that out there in a way that is effective right now, except for not Trump, is what it seems like.
Well, at the local level, people know, and that's why the Democrats have been winning races all across the country that they're not supposed to have won. Individual candidates in individual districts, a lot of individual candidates have tailored a message to fit their particular constituency, and it's working. Now, the party nationally... doesn't necessarily have a through line, but that's because we don't see a presidential candidate out there that we can galvanize around who would then have a message. That will come into focus after the primaries, in which we'll have probably 37 candidates for president. Yeah. We'll have a debate in which they're going to have like tiers of people standing. There'll be so many on the stage.
Yeah, we'll have bunk cubes for
bunk
debates.
Cubes. It'll be like one of those games, Hollywood Squares.
But
used to sit and all this up on top of each other.
But I think, you know, Patty, the question is, are the parties captured by their extreme voices?
Mm-hmm.
And there clearly is a fight for the soul of the Democratic Party, even if there's no leadership in the Democratic Party. There is a fight for the soul.
And Bernie Sanders used Martin Luther King Day to say that President Obama was underqualified. I mean, like, really?
But Bernie lost.
Exactly.
Our party has not been captured by it. There are fights. And, I mean, look at what just happened in the 6th Congressional District Democratic primary. The party galvanized around this one woman who was the most progressive, the most left-wing, and the person who won was my buddy Sean Kasten, who I think you've met. And Sean said, look, I'm a moderate Democrat. I'm a pro-business Democrat. I'm strong on climate change and strong on a lot of things. But I'm not all the way out there on the left. And he won. And frankly, he's a much better fit for that district, very much like Pennsylvania 18, than some of the people who ran and lost.
Let me let Eric for a second. As far as the idea that when Ken says right wingers, there's this idea that they don't want to believe in climate change. They enjoy all the deregulation of the EPA and drawing down all the sort of idea of bringing emissions to a level that we hope is healthier for us. Do you feel like that's what right wingers are right now? The right side of the party the right side of the aisle.
I don't think the conservatives are. No, I think that there's a faction of folks who are very selfish and maybe are leaning that way because of their donor base. Because let's realize that every elected official, all 535 elected officials in Washington, their biggest concern is trying to figure out how much money they can have in the bank by the next quarter, the end of the fundraising quarter. And that is their number one priority, bar none.
So
that way they can get reelected. Let's talk about, you can't just label conservatives as being these bad people because we're not.
No, I'll label the Republican Party as being that because the Republican Party Republican Party has gone along with the gutting of the EPA.
Okay, look, I will say that right now our party, we have problems, and the elected leadership within our party is problematic because they're going along with what this maniac in the White House is doing.
And what Paul Ryan has always wanted to do, and all these guys, Mitch McConnell, Ryan,
McConnell's down in coal country. You know a little bit about coal country, right?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, tell me you're opposed to coal.
I actually am opposed to what we're doing with coal right now. Yes, I am. Thanks.
All coal.
I'm not opposed to all coal, but there's very little coal.
But you're a Democrat.
I'm good with that.
And you can say that you're not opposed to all coal.
Well, no, actually, I would be ostracized by my friends, and they would, draw and quarter me and stone me in the public square.
Right, so, don't just lump everyone into one category.
Yeah, but your party's in control in Washington, and it's decimating.
Well, they're doing a very bad job.
They are.
I've admitted that.
Okay, here we have bipartisan agreement.
Let's go to a break.
You can say that the NRA is almost a domestic terrorism team at some point.
Okay, let's hold that because our next caller wants to have a conversation about gun legislation. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. So that was perfect pivot, Eric. And I know Ken wanted to jump in too, but I thought we would let the you guys. Okay, more for this on 720 WGN, and here come the texts. Excellent. Moments ago, Eric Elk, the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois, brought up a topic that we were going to turn to in just a moment because our listener, one of our friends of the show, a young lady who we've had the pleasure of talking to on many occasions, and I apologize, Jasmine, that we haven't been able to talk or play Battleship this week. It's been a bit hectic, and I'm going to go ahead and just blame the White Sox. Is that okay, Jasmine?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Thank you. What did you want to say in regards to gun legislation?
I wanted to share this because I think it's crazy. I was watching some random YouTube today, and you know how in front of some of the videos they show ads and stuff?
Right, yes.
Well, I saw a trailer for a new Purge movie, Now, I'm pretty sure you know what the purge is.
Panel, are you familiar with the movie The Purge? Sure. Okay.
There are two of them, right? I think
there's like three or four.
I think it's three.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of killing and violence and lots of guns. Like, really? You're going to show an ad for a new Purge movie when all this craziness is going on in the world?
I know, and there isn't. But the thing is, there's money to be made, and as long as that's true, they'll find different ways to get that, you know, get their advertising out, and without regard for who might be watching it. Unfortunately,
I just think that's a little bit crazy, though.
I know. Well, did you want to talk about? Are you talking at school with your classmates? Is there still this sort of, discussion about guns and violence when it comes either in schools or in the neighborhoods, Jasmine?
Well, my social studies teacher recently had us read an article about students that are pro Second Amendment and how they get bullied at their schools.
Okay.
So that there's a convention for young people that are pro guns and pro life, mm-hmm. so that they can interact with students that feel the same way. And one of the quotes from the article was, it's a millennial thing to be to support guns, and that being against guns is the new cool thing.
Well, I think, and then this is interesting because this kind of goes, don't you think, guys, to talking about group projects, right? And the idea that really what I think kids learn is that there's always going to be that one guy, and you have to, you know, whether or not you agree or disagree or they don't do the work you expect them to, the same thing is true of opinions. There's always going to be somebody who doesn't agree with you, and our opinion should be safe. Like, unless they are threatening you directly or they are doing something that is clearly hateful, but their right to say that they support the Second Amendment should be protected. Do you want to say, Eric?
Yeah, I think it's almost kind of sad if they have a group, you know, or conventions or something for folks to meet solely so they can associate with those that are like-minded versus to integrate with other folks and actually prove your point if you believe in something and be challenged a little bit.
Well, it is interesting when you're sitting down having a conversation with somebody maybe you meet or kind of knew for a while, and I mean, you do for me, right? I get locked into what I believe and the way I, the conversations I have with my family and friends and you guys, right? We don't agree on everything, Eric.
Right.
But we have kind of this.
There's a respect, though.
Right. But when somebody, I think the change comes, Jasmine, when somebody's kind of aggressive with their opinion and they find out that you differ from them, they get almost hostile. Have you run into that, Jasmine?
No, but that's why I'm not going to say if I have any sides, because I don't want to get any hate.
Right. What were you saying, Dave?
Yeah, well, I think that it's not even so much disagreeing aggressively. I mean, Eric and I were just disagreeing aggressively, and I know he's a moron, but I still respect him.
No.
No, but that actually is the point, because he knows I'm joking, and everybody knows I'm joking, but the problem that you have is when it becomes personal.
Right.
When it's not just aggressive, it's nasty, it's personal, it's questioning your motives and questioning your humanity.
Well, and Jasmine, I don't know if you heard, but Ken was trying to get into the conversation with Dave and Eric, but I had to let them go without, and I apologize to Ken for not letting him jump in, but I was worried about having three voices, and then it becomes sort of it's hard to like pick out an argument.
Oh, no, it's fine. I was actually going to defend Eric. I mean, I want to make a broader point.
Yes.
Social media is still obviously relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
People are learning how to deal with it. Companies are learning how to deal with it. Those who invented a large part of social media still don't understand it. And I think what social media does is it tends to inflame people on the extremes. It is perfect for anybody who wants to yell at anybody. So you've got the left who want to scream at just about everybody in their party and then outside. And you've got the right who want to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it inflates. It creates a false impression that there are these large movements of left and right wing people that are taking over parties.
Yes.
It's not the case. The right wing nuts are still about 27-28% of Donald Trump's core support. And then the left guys, well, look, they got crushed by Hillary. So, and that's all you need to know about that.
Right.
So I think, right now we're in a this is all something new, and I think it's going to profoundly impact the presidential election coming up in 3 years. I think it'll be a little bit different.
Jasmine, I appreciate the fact that you want to protect yourself and the fact that in the idea that you don't want to necessarily express everything you believe, and you're playing it right. Do what's right for you, and of course we're here to work on it with you too.
And before I go, I wanted to share something funny. I just remembered. You know how a few minutes ago one of the guys was talking about coal?
Yes, that was Eric and Dave were both talking about coal.
Well, recently in my environmental science class, we were learning about how, like, coal forms and stuff. And my teacher said something funny when he was talking about it. He said that if anthracite coal, which is the heart, you know, the purest, is keeps being pressurized, it'll turn into a diamond.
Right.
And then my teacher was like, guys, if you want to make your girl happy, go get her a piece of coal.
I love it.
Nice.
And you know what? Apply pressure. A lot of pressure. Which is what a lot of women do when they want that piece of coal.
No, hey, oh,
wish I had thought of that.
And by the way, I hope you guys will be watching the home opener game on Monday if it doesn't snow out.
I know.
I'll be there.
I think they're gonna
play. So when you receive a lump of coal, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
Santa brings you a lump of coal. You could turn that into a diamond.
Santa's being aspirational, I'm just saying. Thank you, Jasmine. Have a wonderful weekend.
Hope you guys have a good night.
Thank you. Go Cubbies. More after this on 720 WGN. On July 18th, 1969, Senator Ted Kennedy drove his car off a bridge in Massachusetts, Chappaquiddick Island. The accident resulted in the death of his passenger, Mary Jo, a 28-year-old campaign strategist who worked for Kennedy. The ongoing investigation into the mysterious and scandalous events forever altered his political legacy and ultimately changed the course of presidential history. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. This movie just came out, and our good friend Ken Jakubowski has seen the movie, has some thoughts, and has a trivia question. We have a prize. I can give out a pizza, Ken. It's been there have been so many things going on. I have not had the chance to prize people with a pizza, so I'd love to do that tonight.
Well, the first question is for those in the studio, so this is not the actual quiz, so don't call in or text.
Okay.
What happened on July 20th? 1969. 2 days later.
Wasn't that the...
Ooh, Roger, if you know, we will take an answer from the newsroom.
No, I'm just seeing the theme song. I'm waiting for their answers.
You want me to give you a hint?
Was it NASA related?
Yeah.
Okay, was it wasn't Apollo 13?
One small step for man.
I just
really?
Said that.
Neil Armstrong?
One giant leap.
I just said that. I said moon landing.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Oh, they thought you said moon walking.
I don't know when Apollo 13 was, like, what, 70-something?
No, it was Apollo 11 that was moonwalking.
Technically, they did moonwalk, but...
Yes.
Yeah, so...
You don't win a prize, Dave, because Ken did not award it to you.
Yeah, no.
I was just like, I just said, you know what? I know how you know, women feel when they say something, they're ignored, and only when the man says it is it true.
No, you have to enunciate.
I said moon landing.
I did not hear you.
I was talking over him, most likely.
Oh, okay.
And I was singing a song.
So you and were doing, Eric is trying to think about it.
You were doing what I usually do. Okay.
Actually, Eric is still not sure what happened on July 20th.
So is that part of what kind of erased it? I mean, did it overshadow the Chappaquiddick?
No, they had hoped it did. So for those who have not seen the movie and want to see it, I will not give anything away. I'll make some general comments. It will not in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion, detract from your going to see the movie. I'm going to criticize the movie quite a bit, but I highly recommend that everybody see the film. And then come home and do your own research, which is what
don't
I did.
Don't spoil anything for people who don't know how this ends.
Surely they know what happens to Mary Jo Kopechne.
Right.
It's a moment in history, just as the other movie earlier in the show was also a historical moment.
Yeah, I went...
Yes, much like watching Titanic.
But everybody knows what happened to Mary Jo Kopechne.
Okay. No, right? Maybe not everybody does.
Really? Yeah.
You can't assume that.
They're waiting for her to tell her story.
Wow. In Reader's Digest this week.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I got a Ouija board. Anybody?
So I'm not going to give anything away, but I think what I'll do is... Let me go about it this way. This movie was important for me to see, which is why I raced this and saw the very first movie in Chicago, because I worked for Senator Ted Kennedy 1979-80 and worked for other Kennedys throughout my lifetime.
What was your experience like with Senator Kennedy?
Well, what was funny about it was I was just a college student. I was on his national campaign staff in Michigan when he ran for president against Jimmy Carter. And he probably came to the state maybe 9 or 10 times. And I don't know how it happened, but every single time he came to the state, I ended up standing right next to him. Somehow would get right next to him. So I met him quite a bit, got the chance to talk to him quite a bit, had quite a few funny interactions. He at some point knew my name and then totally forgot it, but then would see me like 2 years later at another event, and he'd look at me and go, Michigan! He'd come up and he'd give me a big bear hug. A tremendous retail politician.
Okay.
Meaning
he's got good customer service.
Eye contact just really makes you feel special. I mean, just great. Mm-hmm. Clinton was that way too. I mean, just tremendous. So to me, I wanted to see this because in 79-80, we were asked on the campaign a lot about Chappaquiddick. Back then, there wasn't any one source you could go to really pin down what were the key facts. Strip away all the noise. What are the facts that are, you know, that you know, are unassailable? It was really hard to identify them because the Kennedys had all their folks that wrote their angle. You had those who hated the Kennedys writing their angle. But as years have gone by, most notably in 1988, when Joe Gargan, who was a central figure, Kennedy's really kind of, I mean, almost like a brother to Ted Kennedy, when he went on the record to someone, Leo, I think Demure, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. That's when stuff started to come out, and we now have a basis of facts. And in this movie, comparing it to the movie JFK, which is a good way to think about it, the central thesis in JFK was completely flawed and completely wrong. In this movie, the central core facts are correct. They adhere to those central core facts. But unfortunately, around the core facts is a lot of speculation, exaggeration, and outright lies. And to some extent, it detracts from the overall power of the film, which needs to be seen. You really need to see this. Having said all that, in my opinion, I went and watched the film. I stripped away all the noise. I looked at the core facts that would not have been affected by the noise in any way, shape, or form. They stand on their own. I then did a bunch of research when I got home, spent a couple hours reading a whole bunch of stuff on the web, and just to confirm, I wanted to make sure that the film was right in those core facts, and it completely changed my opinion of Ted Kennedy in this.
Are you going to tell us what you're...
Well, you're never going to be able to prove whether or not he was culpable in the death of Mary Jo Kopechne legally. Because
spoilers.
No. We all know this. He went on to a Senate career.
The movie never resolves it, I'm sure.
No, but that she died.
Oh.
Yes, she does. Mm. No, the movie takes an opinion.
You're right.
We promised
we wouldn't spoil.
The movie takes an opinion and has a point of view. But you're never going to, realistically, we are never going to know because there was no autopsy done. But there are certain facts in the movie that have made me believe that something
nefarious
happened that wasn't supposed to happen, and it has made me completely change my view of him. And I'm not sure how yet. I have to really think about it. It's like we've had so many of our institutions under assault, including democracy, in the last year and a half that has shaken all of us. For me personally, this shook me because I'm like, wow, I just never... I mean, it's the first time I really saw it, and seeing it in film, it's very powerful.
Now, a texter who I believe was disappointed with a segment earlier has texted in something. They have a different take. Have you ever heard this
theory? I have never heard this theory, because Mary Jo knew, this is from the 773, because Mary Jo knew Ted Kennedy, killed his brother John F. Kennedy and may say something.
Well, see, that's not what I concluded. Yes.
What?
Yeah, that he killed John F. Kennedy. Yes.
What?
Excuse me?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
No.
He shot.
Shut up.
He set up Lee Harvey Oswald. He did. It wasn't the mob. This is the new book I'm working on.
So Ted Kennedy was on the grassy knoll.
Yes.
Eric's head is going to explode.
Yes. No.
Now I understand.
He's on the grassy knoll just watching and observing to see. Oswald was his guy.
I see.
He paid Oswald to be up there. Yeah.
Okay.
Please hear the sarcasm in Ken's voice.
This is new. It came out in the new documents that they released from the Kennedy assassination. Yes. It's all in there.
So you have a You know, I'm so shook.
I do have a trivia question.
Yeah, trivia question.
Was
now,
that in the piece that you wrote for The Onion?
Hey, listen, I was once pilloried in The Onion, and it actually was very funny. It made fun of me, but it was true. It was very
funny. How did they make fun of you?
Oh, just something I was doing for Reverend Jackson, and Reverend Jackson's spokesperson, and it just made fun of me as a spokesperson, and I have to tell you, it was spot on, and it was hysterical. I had no qualms with what they wrote. I laughed my butt off. But, yeah, here's the quiz for the prize. Are we giving away a pizza?
We have a Lou Malnati's pizza. There are over 40 Chicagoland.
You know, if we had one here, I'm really hungry.
I'm sorry.
And this is an actual...
I should have brought my pizza from home. It was very good.
This is an actual Trivial Pursuit question. I imagine there are different versions of the game Trivial Pursuit. There still is Trivial Pursuit, correct?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. So
you can probably get it on sale at Toys R Us.
Yeah, probably. Well, yes, along with a lot of other things there. So the question is, what did Ted Kennedy wear to Mary Jo Kopechne's funeral?
Oh, I know. Oh, wait, that's because you told me earlier.
312-981-7200. What did Senator Ted Kennedy... Was he a senator? He was a senator at the time.
Yeah,
senator Ted Kennedy.
He was the presumptive Democratic nominee for 1972 for president. Everyone, it was all over with the shouting. He was going to be the Democratic Party's nominee. We would have been spared George McGovern and maybe spared Nixon a second term.
To win the prize again, we want to remind you, you do have to call in with the answer. We cannot take text. I mean, we're more than happy to read your texts, but we cannot award the Lou Malnati's gift card to the person who can answer the question one more time, Ken.
What did Ted Kennedy wear to Mary Jo Kopechne's funeral?
312-981-7200. Even if you have a guess, what did Ted Kennedy wear to Mary Jo Kopechne's funeral? More after this on 720 WGN. The film Chappaquiddick has come out this weekend, and Entertainment Studios is hoping that the political drama, Ken is saying that it's got a lot of great storytelling, that it's well done, it's somewhat biased, and has a point of view, which is not uncommon for filmmakers. I mean, they have their take.
They could have done it without a point of view because, in my opinion, the point of view is where they got into the speculation, the exaggeration, and the falsehoods. Right. And they could have done it without that. Nevertheless, there are certain core facts that if you pay close attention to the film and then do some research when you get home, you'll figure out what those core facts are, and that will help you make a decision as to what actually happened in this.
Now, the question was, what did Ted Kennedy wear to Mary Jo, how do I say her last name?
Kopechne.
Kopechne's funeral. I'm going to read a couple of the texts because you cannot win if you text in, by the way. So those of you who have the correct answer, I apologize, but we have been told by Anne, who lives in our prize closet, she comes out and she goes, no texts! So we have to only do it by phone. So some of our texters have sent in answers. He wore his lucky undies is not the correct answer. Although, who are we to say? I mean,
his lucky undies.
That's only in his own mind.
I thought he wore a dicky.
I believe that was one of the answers. He might have worn a dicky. Mm-hmm. I don't have a...
Hey, there may have been just a thin layer of gabardine between him and...
Oh.
You never know.
Swimming trunks.
From the 815, yes. Someone, Nick has said swimming trunks. Let's see if Myrna knows what Ted Kennedy was wearing to the funeral. Hey, Myrna, how are you doing?
Hi, good, thank you. Was it a neck brace?
Yes, it was.
There you go.
Congratulations.
Now, Myrna, I'm sure Michael already asked you. You haven't won a pizza recently, have you?
It's been a while.
We're gonna send out a gift card for Lou Malnati's home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40 plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. It's a $25 value. And I have to ask, are you going to go see the movie Chappaquiddick?
I plan to. I want to see the difference between the coverage back then and what the movie is showing. And see if it's a different angle.
What did you think when this happened? What were your thoughts then?
When I was a little girl back then, I remember basic stuff, and basically everyone was blaming him, saying that, you know, his clout is what covered up everything. Had it been someone else, they would have been charged with murder, and it's only because of who he was that he got away with it, basically.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I haven't really read up on anything about it since then, and I don't know what else has come from it, so that's why I'm kind of anxious to see what the movie has to say about it.
Well, when you do see it, let us know. And for now, you have won a gift card for Lou Malnati, so maybe you do some pizza, you go out to the movies,
yeah.
You'll be all you'll be set to go. Have a great night, Myrna. Hold on the line for Michael to get your information. Joanne, you have not won the, I apologize, but Myrna got in. She beat you to the buzzer, but are you planning on seeing the movie Chappaquiddick?
Yeah, I hope so.
Now, what do you think? When you go to see a movie that's a political drama, you know, kind of a slice of history, like, did you see the movie JFK? That was the Kevin Costner, Oliver Stone movie.
No, I didn't see that.
Are there historical dramas that you have enjoyed? Just out of the, just curious.
We don't watch that many movies, actually.
You
so
don't?
No.
Yes, go ahead, Ken.
But you don't watch that many movies, but yet you would like to see this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah. I remember from a long time ago when it happened.
See, that's interesting. People kind of want to, because it also puts you in the place. Ken, do you feel that the movie with the, you know, obviously it's a period piece, do they do a good job of capturing the essence of that time in history?
Oh, I think they do a great job with it. I mean, there are a lot of good things to say about this film. It just upsets me when filmmakers take a point of view and when they don't have to. They could still have made a great film without taking a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't have to lie and make stuff up that never happened. I wish I could talk about all that, but I don't want to spoil the film. Maybe in a month we can revisit and we can talk about all that stuff. But it was a really good film. It was very well acted. Very well acted.
Yeah.
That's what I understand, too. I think Ro Khan had, what's his name that's on all the time to review, and he also said it was a real good movie.
Richard Roper.
Mm-hmm. Richard Roper, right.
Now, I know that you didn't call in time, but I do have a consolation prize, because I feel like consoling you. I don't know why. I think it's a Friday night, and I just, I want you to be happy tonight, Joanne. Do you, Well, here's the thing. It's not Tom Skilling, but I do have a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers, Heating and Cooling.
Nice.
Yep, from the 60 Minute Men. So hold on.
Can I win one of those? That sounds really
thank
cool.
You.
Of course, Joanne. Hold on the line. Apparently, better weather for you than for Mary Jo. Come on, that was terrible.
But by the way, I'd like to object to the comparison between JFK and Chappaquiddick.
No, but I mean, like, I was just wondering. That
no, you said it, Ken said it. JFK was a horrendously stupid movie. JFK was a movie that if you would believe the conspiracy theory woven by the movie JFK, there basically would have had to have been literally thousands of people who kept this conspiracy silent. For decades.
You know who believed that? One of my former clients. No, Mort Saul, who was an assistant to Jim Garrison.
I don't.
In real life, he threw his career away. Literally, Mort Saul, who was one of the biggest comedians of the day, threw his entire career away by joining Jim Garrison and backing that bunch of nonsense.
I gotta believe that Mort Saul also being kind of an unpleasant human being had something to do with it. Let's go to Cindy and see what she has to say. Cindy, are you planning on seeing the movie Chappaquiddick?
I so hope to. That sounds like a great, great movie to watch.
Do you like historical dramas? Because I do. I like historical dramas.
I really do. And, you know, the Kennedys are some sort of iconic family. So while we're talking about JFK versus Chappaquiddick versus the airplane crash with the gorgeous son and his princess.
Oh, John Kennedy Jr. Yeah.
Thank you, John. And, you know, all of this is just this wrapped up Camelot-ish American drama.
Did you see Jackie with Natalie Portman?
Yes.
Yes. I thought that
was... Oh, my heavens.
It's really well. You've not seen Jackie?
I saw it, and it was what I liked about that film. It was very historically accurate.
It was beautiful,
too. It was beautifully done. She did a great job of acting.
It was painful. Yeah.
Well, it painful. That's the word I would use to describe Chappaquiddick, the film, is sad.
Yeah. Okay.
Profound sadness I had walking out of that film.
Wow. Well, there you go.
That's why I want to see this movie. I'm excited about it. But, you know, the movie we're referring to, Jackie, Pillbox Hats. That's all I have to say. Pillbox Hats.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend, Cindy. We'll talk to you again
too.
Soon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I think a listener's calling in to, I don't know if they're going to challenge you, Dave, on the movie JFK, but it seems like they have an opinion. Eric, do you have a favorite historical movie? Because my favorite, I would say, I would probably put Lincoln at the top of my favorite historical dramas with Daniel Day-Lewis.
All the President's Men.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's a really good one. But I agree. Lincoln, I thought Lincoln was really well done.
That was excellent.
So good. Yes.
I have two.
Yes.
Reds and all the president's men.
Ooh, Reds
was, to me, especially the way they used real people as the witnesses, the actual people. I mean, Roger Baldwin, the founder of the ACLU, who was on his deathbed, but he agreed to be filmed. I mean, it's just... The only fault I had with the film was they didn't put the names of the people underneath. So people thinking they're actors, people had no clue that these were real people, real witnesses.
I think another movie I really enjoy is Glory. We're going to watch that with Griffin.
Oh, Glory's great.
Glory's a great movie.
Great movie.
Let me take a break here, and we got to go to news. Gene, if you'll hold on till after the news, we'll find out what you have to say about the movie JFK. This is Chicago's very own... Oh, I have to take a break first, right, Michael? Oh, I'm sorry. Here's a break. Tonight, did you go to the movies? What'd you see? Did you see Ready Player One? Did you go see the political historical drama that we've been talking about, Chappaquiddick? And with that conversation, we've also been talking about the great historical dramas, and Dave Lundy had some thoughts on that. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Dave Lundy, the president of Aileron Communications. You hear him regularly on Touche with Justin Kaufman and some other guy. Eric Elk in studio, the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois, also former political strategist for Mark Kirk, for Senator Mark Kirk. We also have in studio with us Ken Jakubowski, who is the president and CEO of Sirius Enterprises, and also, as you heard earlier, has been a political strategist and worked on many campaigns, including Reverend Jesse Jackson. He's worked with Senator Ted Kennedy, which gives him some insight into the movie Chappaquiddick. We brought up the movie JFK, and Gene had some thoughts about that. Hey, Gene, what did you want to say?
I'm so glad you just repeated that lineup because I missed it at the beginning.
Oh, my pleasure. I should do it more often. Thank you for that.
I have a fault that I cannot tell when someone's kidding and when he was blaming Teddy for JFK's death.
I know.
He was off my desk chair.
Completely kidding.
Actually, you know, the conspiracists have weighed and weighed and weighed and gone over what happened in Texas. And one of the thoughts is that it is a possibility that in Bobby's, and there was a reference to this not long ago in the press, his going after the mob, that he was warned, and even JFK had second thoughts about, Bobby was a zealot, and the most, the bulldog of the bunch. The others were a little bit more even-tempered, and they're not sure that the mob didn't play a role in what happened to JFK. And the thought is that one of the reasons, there would have been many, that Bobby went into such a deep depression afterward was that he came to the realization that his attack and going after the mob might have played a part in what happened. And it was very, very sad. You know, and so for some of that family, they've gotten away with a lot, but they've suffered a lot. And in 1965, I went to work for the head of the college division in a publishing house who came from Boston and who tutored Teddy and knew them all. And his brother, my boss's brother, was special assistant to Bobby until he was killed.
Oh, wow.
And then became special assistant, or at least one of them, to Teddy. And he's to blame. He and whoever else was to keep their eye on him are to blame for letting him get away that night. I mean, that didn't need to happen. And that's what, you know, the people around the candidate or anybody of importance is expected to do, is monitor the situation and have eyes in the backs of their heads, just like mothers.
Interesting.
Well,
And I have never seen JFK. I think he's talking about Garrison's production, right?
It's Oliver Stone's movie.
Yep.
Oliver Stone's. I heard so much bad about it. I just thought
We mentioned that Jackie was painful, and you're saying Chappaquiddick was sad. I would say that I think that JFK was sort of jarring. It was sort of discombobulating. How's that?
Look,
I have a different word.
The country?
It was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah.
The word I would use was infuriating. Okay. I sat there and going, these are lies!
Right.
This did not happen, and people are going to walk out thinking it did.
Well, that's true for so many Oliver Stone,
yeah,
well,
totally.
Growing up, much like our caller, I'm going to make an assumption. I read a ton of books on the John F. Kennedy assassination. And there is a well-meaning and well-intentioned conspiracy theories everywhere. But in the late aughts. I think what it might have been 2009, 2010, maybe 2008, somewhere in there. Vincent Bugliosi, the prosecutor from out in, former prosecutor from out in California, who put the Manson family in prison, wrote an exhaustive book that I swear the book is weighs about 5 pounds. It's like 700, 800, 900 pages.
Yeah.
He went over every little piece of the Kennedy assassination, and I read and skimmed through it. It took me literally an entire summer. And I am absolutely convinced, as Bugliosi is convinced, that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. And if you really want to look at all the actual facts and evidence, he does a masterful job as a prosecutor of looking critically at every fact and lays it out. And you got to remember, Lee Harvey Oswald tried to kill General Walker a couple months before, shot at General Walker.
Right, but he was supposed to be a terrible shot.
No, actually, no. Not a
really?
Terrible. No. Bugliosi goes through that. No, he was a very good shot. Very good shot.
Oh, yeah. God.
He had ties to our CIA, and because I believe because he traveled abroad and he was in Russia. I mean, he
right.
bumped into that.
Yeah.
But no, there's no question in my mind he acted alone, and for a while I wasn't sure.
Well, you know, it's something from my generation. I'm 77. I will never forget living through it. My husband had just been transferred to Indianapolis, and he was buried on my birthday, and I started a new job on, must have been the 25th, and I reported to work because I didn't know any better. I hadn't worked, I had already matriculated through HR, and the head of the HR was at the door, and he said, "We're closing, we're not going to be open today," so I went back home, and it was just, I mean, it was some of the saddest stuff I ever hoped to endure. And, you know, it just destroyed. The man that I worked for had been drunk in a church during the Pearl Harbor. And, you know, alcohol was his respite when terrible things happened. And that was a hard period to get him through because he was so close to the Kennedys and grew up with them. And, you know, it was an awful, awful thing. And if people who hadn't been through it, just, I don't think they'll, you know, the turn our country took. And then I really think that was the beginning of the real raging conspiracy theories.
Oh, I don't know. I suspect there have been conspiracy theories since the beginning.
Oh, I'm sure there were, but it just became everything. I have an eccentric brother who thought the Holocaust was staged, that the walk on the moon was staged. I mean, it just gets crazier and crazier. So, anyway, thank you for taking my call.
Of course. It's great to hear from you. Thank you so much, Gene. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know what? Let's take a break here. We have our sound-off segment. I don't know if people are worked up. We didn't even talk about the tariffs with the tariff war. Is it a trade war now? Because none of these tariffs have really taken effect that President Trump has.
I do know. Well, all of these tariffs are proposed. The Chinese, it's proposed.
Uh-huh.
Our side, it's proposed. And I don't really think... I think Donald Trump is simply trying to... He's appealing to his base. There's no question. But I think at the end of the day, I think Trump's trying to change the conversation.
Is that, I mean, I think that that's how he drives a negotiation, is to take these stands, to, you know, either be belligerent or mocking, whatever that sort of take is, to drive somebody into having a conversation.
This is very similar to what he did with North Korea. I mean, he scared the hell out of everybody. He was belligerent as all heck. North Koreans took it seriously, but he really just wanted to negotiate. And he's thrilled to go to the table with them now. And if you read between the lines, he can't wait to negotiate with the Chinese, and the Chinese have sent the same hint back. So I don't think anything's going to happen to this. I think a lot of this, there's great buys.
But there
in
are
the stock
people.
Market.
I mean, right? Well, they're great buys, but how affected are people who maybe aren't as savvy when it comes to buying and trading, or people who rely on their 401ks?
You don't look. You shouldn't look now. Don't
but
look.
What about people who are closer to their retirement?
There are people on pensions now who are lost thousands and thousands of dollars, or those who are about to retire.
The president has said that yes, people are going to suffer, but this is the cost of changing things?
I think the president, the president's nuts. I mean, I honest to God, I mean, the stuff he says, it's just
what he is saying has devastating consequences, and he has no care in the for anyone but himself.
And devastating consequences on a global basis. There are other markets around the world that are impacted by what goes on here and what he says. And I, you know, we've talked about
there's also a national security.
It just keeps going.
There's a national security part to this as well, not just economics. I mean, what he is doing is really damaging the United States of America.
There's no question.
What's your take on his tweets about and his conversation about Amazon and that they are taking advantage of the United States Postal Service having an effect on their stock price?
It's outrageous because it's not about Amazon. First of all, I read a really interesting story earlier tonight, actually, right before I came over to the show, and it said that Gary Cohn, the former chief economic advisor to the president, had heard him ranting about Amazon. So they organized a special briefing for Trump with several people. There were PowerPoints, there was a briefing, there was a whole discussion, and the briefing focused on basically debunking all of his hysteria over Amazon. And so Cohn,
anytime you have to debrief somebody about their hysteria, that's an issue.
Right. Well, but what was interesting, of course, is that Trump completely ignored everything that he learned, and continued to say the things that are just factually untrue.
Well,
but remember, this is not about Amazon. This is about Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, who owns the Washington Post.
And who has more money than Trump does, and Trump's jealous.
Exactly. Just like the intervening over the Time Warner merger was not about Time Warner. It was about CNN.
Absolutely.
So then, was this a good week to buy an Amazon stock as the price started to tumble a little bit?
Yeah, but if you look at what the price per share is, it's so ridiculously
$1,400 per share.
It was down to $1,300 earlier in the week.
$1,300. I mean, like, so you buy
that's
two shares.
Deal.
But what if it goes up to like $5,000 per share?
Look,
or $10,000?
This is actually a great time to get into the market because the market is overreacted to this. This isn't going to happen. There's going to be a ton of noise.
So
it's not going. We're not going to have tariffs that actually will go into effect.
So here's my question: Is it a good time to buy like right now over the weekend before the markets open again on Monday? And can you, or is it better to wait until the next drop?
I would look on Monday or Sunday and see what the futures are. If the futures are down, I would wait a little bit.
See how the Asian markets are.
It's going to still go up and down and up and down until this thing settles down because the market doesn't like instability. And every time our president opens his mouth, it creates instability. But it's going to go up and when the pressure is relieved totally, it's going to fly.
Yes, sir.
I would just say that the consequences of his inept actions and comments are going to be paid for by all Americans,
mm-hmm.
one way or another. I mean, this is every city, every town.
Well, farmers are starting to be concerned. Yeah,
in our state,
bad
in our
for
country.
Illinois.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is impacting everyone.
And I don't agree with Ken, by the way. I do. I mean, yes, I will grant you that a lot of this is posturing, but I actually believe a lot of these things are going to come to pass. There will be tariffs. There will be a trade war because I don't think that Trump actually knows what he's doing.
I don't think he has the intestinal fortitude. That's the nice radio way of saying it. I don't think
you gotta
have
that when you drink water in Mexico.
Yeah. He doesn't know any better.
He has the guts
because
to do
he's
it.
Incompetent. He doesn't know any better. Nor does he care.
Well, I know better than to take too much longer to go
he
to a break.
He will blink.
Here, take a quick break. When we come back, if you have something you got to say, if you want to just spew and shout and yell, or if you want to celebrate, we got 12 seconds for you on the air. If you want to promote something, if you have an event coming up and you want to say, hey, come out and see this show or come to this fundraiser, you can use the 12 seconds for that, too. You'll have 12 seconds to sound off. 312-981-7200. Say whatever you want. Get it off your chest. 312-981-7200. Otherwise, the three of us will. The four of us. Well, who am I not counting? More after this on 720 WGN.
It's time to sound off.
I've got something to say.
I have something to say.
I've got something to say.
Give us a call right now at 312-981-7200, and we'll get you on with Patty Vasquez and our political roundtable.
Okay, everyone's got 12 seconds to say whatever they want. We will not argue with you. We will not interrupt you. And that, for that, Dave, Ken, and Eric, I'm leaving your microphones off. So yeah, you actually can say whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. No one will hear you. That's all, Dave. You can say something right now.
Hi.
Hi. So we will not interrupt anyone who calls in to get anything they want off of their chest. And I offered a pizza to somebody, and if they call in with what I offered to you, I will give you a Lou Malnati's pizza to one of our callers who sounds off. When your time is up, you will hear this sound. Let me see if this works. Let's test it out. Nope. Hold on a second. Why is it?
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it was pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We are trying to get all organ transplant donors to appear from 1 to 4 at the Bean in Chicago, and we're trying to get in the Guinness Book of Records for the most donors at one place at one time.
Congratulations.
It'll be a lot of fun.
That sounds great. My horn was not available, so I had to let you run on. So, Kathy, let people know again, the Bean on what day?
April 21st, Saturday, April 21st.
And is there a website they can go to find out more information?
Transplant Village.
Transplant Village. Excellent, Kathy. Have a wonderful weekend. Great to hear from you. Of course. Thank you. We have Eugene calling in. Hey, Eugene, ready? Hold on a second. Let me set your timer for you. Ready? You've got 12 seconds, and I might let you go more. Depends. Go ahead. Go, Eugene.
The saddest part of my life was the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. I was 19 years old sitting in a bar in Milwaukee, policeman's bar, when the news came on. And the whole place erupted. Sad part. The second sad part of my life was the passing of Merle Haggard. I used to live on Halstead Street North, Buckingham. Our entire family used to migrate down there, and we lived there for years. Anyway, great show. I just picked you up last night. I took a chance on calling in.
Oh,
Thank you.
Appreciate that. I didn't have the horn again. I'll do it now. Thank you. That was great. We have, we're going to go to Laura next. Hold on, Laura. Don't start yet because I got to reset the clock. All right. One second. Reset. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Go, Laura.
This has been bugging me for a long time. It seems to me that now that the Hispanic population is increasing very quickly, we American-speaking, English-speaking people should be able to pronounce the names correctly. For instance, you, when you first came on the air, were Patty Vasquez. Then they changed it to Patty Vasquez. It's not Vasquez, as you know, Patty. It's Vasquez. And all the other Spanish names should be able to be pronounced correctly.
What an interesting call, Laura. I appreciate it. And my mother appreciates that because a lot of people called me Vasquez. I said Vasquez, which my mother, Patricia, it's what Laura says, it's Vasquez. Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Bye, Patty.
Thank you. That was lovely. How do I can't give people the horn. Here we go. Okay, so you know what? Because those were lovely calls, and the next two, I think, have other takes, I'm also going to let them run on and not judge them. And here we go. We're going to go first to Jacqueline. Hey, Jacqueline, you're ready, set, go.
Hi, Patty. I'm the one that texted you about spoiling the movie for me, but it says I was looking forward to reading the book first, and I had never heard that history. So I was kind of disappointed about it, but... I'll still listen to you. I know I said I think I'm going to take a break from you because this is my entertainment. I have no TV, so I look forward to coming home from work and turning on the radio.
Well, this is what we're going to do. You. I want you to enjoy a Lou Malnati's pizza, whether you're reading the book or watching the movie, and I still hope you'll enjoy it and let us know what you think. I didn't want to cut Susan off. I flinched, and I told my guests when they came in, I was like, I think that she was so excited to talk about it. I don't think she realized what she was doing. So I want you to have...
It's okay. you know, it's okay.
It's okay. No, but okay. I'm still sending you a pizza, my friend. Please.
You don't have to do that.
No, I
just was calling back to let you know I'll still listen to you. If not,
I'm not. But Jacqueline, I'm not trying to, and I appreciate that. I'm not trying to bribe you. If you want, I'm gonna have a. If you hold on the line, Michael will get your information, and we're gonna send out a Lou Mama's
pizza. I would love
that.
I'll share that with my family.
Oh, please do.
Thank you so much because they've been really good to me. So. I will make sure that we all enjoy it together.
Excellent. You hold on the line.
Thank you so much.
Of course. And let me know what you think about The Siege of Jadaville, both the book and the movie, because now you've got me thinking.
I will do that.
All right. Have a wonderful weekend, Jacqueline.
Thank you so much. You too.
Thank you. Lovely to hear from you. Now, Joan, you're not alone on this. Just so you know, when I go to public events, people say the same thing. But you take it away, and I will not interrupt you. Take it away, Joan.
Hi, Patty. I love your show. I listen to you constantly. But that YouTube psychic you've got on, I can't take him. It's like fingernails on a chalkboard. I don't get him at all.
I wish he would drink some water when he does the show sometimes.
Oh, I think he needs more than water. I don't know. He just says, I mean, honest to God, I can't deal with him.
I know. You know, it's funny. There's a Trucker Rich who, it's one of those things where I have to balance out the people who reach out. And then, believe me, when I'm in public, there are people who absolutely adore him and people who feel just like you do. So know that, Joan, okay?
Oh, God, yeah. I listen to you with all my heart and soul, but, oh, my God, he makes me nuts.
Don't be nuts. Just take some deep breaths and you know what we should do? I think you should. You know what, Joan? If you call in and get a reading done, I will give you an award, a prize for calling in and dealing with his nonsense on a reading.
Oh, this I gotta see.
I'm just saying. Give it a shot. All right. Any Wednesday night, our iTunes psychic every Wednesday night. Dr. Dingman joins us after 1 a.m. So you know it's.
I'm coming home from work at like 1:15, and I got him on the radio, and I'm just going crazy.
Well, give it a shot, and you know it's right after White Sox Wednesday, so I think that that's back to back. It's back to back funniness for me. I enjoy it, and I'm glad that you're hanging out with us.
Live from Chicago, Illinois. Here is another episode of What's That From?
We will take our last two callers for Sound Off. We have a movie scene that Michael Heidemann has scoured the internet for, determined it as the best, most appropriate moment for tonight's show. When you know what movie we are destroying for you so that you can never watch it the same way again, give us a call at 312-981-7200. Again, that number is 312-981-7200. We have a gift card from Apt Electronics. All right, everybody, take it away. Are we not doing it?
No, I'm the narrator. Should I go?
Yes.
Yes, that was your cue.
Even with music.
All right, everybody, take it away.
Interiors.
This is going very well already. I'm so excited. Hold on a second. Let me do this. Ready? I'll hear back. Take it back. Let's do it. Reset. Reset. Quiet on the set. And action.
Interior, Spud's office, morning. Spud, in an obviously new Mortzil suit, struts past Carolyn at the reception desk in high spirits.
Morning, Spud. You look happy.
Any better, and I'd be guilty.
You were never that innocent, Sugar Pie.
How do you know? You wish.
Wipe to Spud on the phone, gazing at the ticker, concern in his eyes. Clicking of the tape ticker comes up over the music. He looks at Marv. Spud's hands clamped over his eyes. The numbers stop. Noise recedes. He opens his eyes, looks down at his desk, stacked with reports and phone messages, as the pool secretary, Gina, calls out. Marvin glumly coasts over in his chair.
Boy, we sure went down the toilet on that one. If we were those guys, we'd just stay with our aircraft. Mr. Jacko's office is after you. Be at the Wyatt Club courts at 6.
Spud looks worried at Marvin. Interior Wyatt Club squash courts, day. Games in progress on the four courts. Heavy hitting sounds. Crossing to Jacko and Spud going at it. Spud is obviously the worse for wear.
Come on, sport. You gotta try harder. I need some exercise, for Christ's sake.
Mr. Jacko, I don't think I can go on.
Oh, finish out the game, Spud. Push yourself.
Meant paternally or sadistically, it's hard to tell. Jacko hits the ball, a big fat shot. Spud returns. Jacko moves him around the court as if punishing him. The kid exhausted, but the ball's never quite out of reach. Till Spud finally can't take it anymore, and at the end of his breath, smashes into the wall and collapses. Jacko laughs, Spud lying there like a sad dog as Jacko hauls him up.
The public is out there throwing darts at a board, sport. I don't throw darts at a board. I only bet sure things. Read Sun Tzu's The Art of War. Every battle is won before it is ever fought. Think about it.
He exits the squash court. Interior Wyatt Club steam room. Day. Jacko and Spud sit alone, wreathed in steam.
Nice club, Mr. Jacko.
Yeah, not bad for a silly city college boy. Bought my way into this club, and now every one of these Ivy League schmucks is sucking my kneecaps. I just got on the board of the Zoological Society, cost me $1 million. That's the thing with wasps. They like animals, but they can't stand people.
Mr. Jacko, we took a little loss today. We got stopped out on Terrafly. About 50,000.
Jacko's expression is frightening but cool.
I guess your father's not a union representative of that company.
What? How do you know about my father?
The most valuable commodity I know of is information. Wouldn't you agree on that?
Yeah.
Interior Wyatt Club locker room. Day. Spuddy is slumped on a bench after taking a shower, drinking a Coke. Jacko toweling himself down, getting dressed. Naked man constantly stopping by to greet him. Hi, Fred. Hi, Barry. How's the wife? Still living in Larchmont? Yeah, still commuting. You ever do anything with that Aetna gas deal? Nah, fishing for information. For a possible drink or meeting, but Jacko stonewalls them all.
You're not as smart as I thought you were, Spuddy boy. Listen hard. Don't count on Graham and Dodd to make you a fortune. Everybody in the market knows the theory. Ever wonder why fund managers can't beat the S&P 500? Because they're sheep, and the sheep get slaughtered. I've been in the business in 69. Most of these high-paid MBAs from Harvard never make it. You need a system, discipline, good people, no deal junkies, no toreadors. The deal flow burns most people out by 35. Give me PSH, poor, smart, and hungry, and no feelings. You don't win them all, you don't love them all. You keep on fighting, and if you need a friend, get a dog. It's trench warfare out there, sport. And in here, too. I got 20 other brokers out there analyzing charts. I don't need another one. Talk to you sometime.
He turns to go, Spud panicking. Is this the kiss off?
I'm not just another broker, Mr. Jacko. If you give me another chance, I'll prove it to you. I'll go the extra yard for you. One more chance, please.
Jacko looks back, a beat, walks over to Spud, thrusts his towel hard at his stomach.
You want one more chance? Then stop sending me information and start getting me some. Get dressed. I'll show you my charts.
Wow, so much whipping.
Whip it good.
Oh, I love this movie.
Billy, you were the first caller in with a guess at the movie. I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody I have no idea what I just read, so take it away, Billy.
I'm going to, what is Wall Street?
Correct.
All right, then.
You didn't know, Patty? Seriously?
Oh, yeah. I was guessing, but I figured that might be it.
Yeah, it was. There was a few lines in there right off the bat. I got it because I seen that movie a couple times, and I don't know. Did either of them get Academy Awards? Because I thought Michael Douglas he was great in that movie.
He was. It was kind of built for that movie.
Yeah, but did he get nominated, or has he ever been nominated? Because
he was.
Oh, okay, yeah. And Charlie Sheen was—he played a good part too. And Daryl Hannah—it was a good movie all around.
It was a good flick. Yeah,
he won for it. He won Best Actor for Wall Street.
Yes.
Oh, he did.
He won Best Actor.
Michael Douglas.
1988. Wow. Wall Street. Yes.
Wow. And the favorite line in that is where he goes, "Greed is good." And
yeah.
It's so 180 degrees the opposite of the way I look at things, but I could see his perspective, though, because that's Wall Street, you know.
The yes, Douglas won the Academy Award. Douglas also won the Golden Globe that year. And they cleaned up and many, many other. He won, gosh, the long list of awards that he won that year. It goes on forever. Needless to say, he's got a room stacked with awards. And Daryl Hannah won a Razzie Award.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah. Can I see that?
And what did they win for original screenplay, too? Because I thought it was easy to follow, and it was written really good. And a couple of my friends worked downtown at the options exchange, so they would explain certain things with, you know, with the stock market. And they said it was pretty realistic because there are people like that. And it's it was very true to life, but totally removed from anything I've ever, you know, experienced. But it was a good movie.
Yeah.
Well, and what's really interesting is that, you know, this was an Oliver Stone movie. We were talking about Oliver Stone and JFK earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at Oliver Stone's career, the movies he does like this one, he's just, he's fantastic. But then he does the crazy stuff, which he does increasingly these days. So, but this was a great movie. This is my favorite Oliver Stone movie ever.
Oh, yeah, and I didn't see the I saw a little bit of the remake. It was like 20 years later, the Wall Street Never Sleeps, I think. Was that one any good, or was it?
It was okay.
You know, it's always hard to capture.
Yeah, follow up.
But it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. I'd encourage you to see it. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I know the best of all time is Godfather and Godfather 2, and it's like, how do you follow up, you know?
Right. I agree. Have a great weekend, Billy. We've got a gift card from Apt Electronics for you. When you stop out at the store out in Glenview, say hi to our good friend Steve Shapiro, or you can shop online at abt.com. They've been pleasing people since 1936. Have a great weekend, Billy. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Patty.
Of course. And by the way, we had a listener who wanted to chime in on our sound off, and one of them, we had two, one of them couldn't hold on, and we apologize if you had to sit through our theatrical rendition of a scene from Wall Street. But Len has hung in there. We will not argue with anything you have to say. Len, you've got 12 seconds to sound off. Go ahead.
Before my 12 seconds, I was at the Merck 30 years. We didn't slick our hair back or dress.
All right,
here's my sound off.
Yes.
For all the newscasters and advertisers out there, as the Ravinia season approaches, please learn to pronounce the name properly. It's not Ravinia, it's Ravinia. It's a beautiful name. We've been in Highland Park 115 years. It's pronounced Ravinia.
Is it really?
Yeah. Ravinia. Yeah.
No one's ever told, you know what? No one's ever told me
three
that.
Three syllables, Ravinia. Not four.
Ravinia. Yeah.
Just like Milwaukee Ravinia. Is Milwaukee.
Like kind of like Patty Vasquez.
Yes.
Land of ravines.
Ravinia. All right, I'm in. I will get that correct now because I am one of the incorrect pronunciators of that word.
Oh, great. I started something.
You've got one. You got one on the right side of the pronunciation for that. Ravinia.
I hope BBM gets it.
I also say jewelry wrong, so that's so you know. I'm working on both those. Ravinia and jewelry.
Bling.
Jewelry.
Jewelry's jewelry. Easy. You pronounce it bling.
No, jewelry, not jewelry. Jewelry.
No, you pronounce it bling.
Bling. There you go. Jewelry, jewelry, and Ravinia. All right. I got it, Len. I think I got it.
All righty.
All right. Have a great weekend. Appreciate it, Len.
No pizza? There's a Lou Malinati's on 2nd Street.
Hold up. that's Anne from the prize closet. It's the end of the week. I don't know if I'm sorry, I got a pizza.
We haven't given away pizza in a long time.
Tonight's I just did it a little
night.
While ago.
But tonight's the first
I'm pretty
night
sure
in a while.
I'm pretty sure I've given away all my pizzas this week. But okay, so would you rather try again some other time? Because if I give you a weatherman, one of the desktop weather stations, you can't win again for several months. Len.
I can't.
No, so it'll be a while before you can win again. I can gift you with a desktop indoor weather station from American
Weather
Makers. I feel
like you're a Monty Hall.
There's no, basically, the bottom line is there's no pizza. She's trying to bribe you with something
I'm all
else.
Out of pizza.
So, Len, would you
but
like
don't
a...
Don't
take
Lou Malinati's pizza.
Yeah, there are none of them.
I'm all done.
Don't take the weather thing because it'll wipe you out. You won't be able to participate for months on GN and any awards.
You can participate, but you can't win a pizza for a while.
So wait till we bring the pizzas back.
Yeah, I'll have two more pizzas next week. I have a limit every week. I know it's hard to believe. Oh, man, Len is crushed. It'll come back around, Len, I promise. I'm on in the middle of the night. It's not like we're backed up with phone calls in the middle of the night. It's okay. It's okay, Len.
Well, I know where you guys are at.
All right. 7:20
a.m.
That's right. Thank you, Len. Be safe and have a wonderful weekend.
All right. Goodbye.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Our previous caller asked if Wall Street won an award for Best Original Screenplay, or it did not. And in fact, going over this list of awards from 1987, this was the year of Fatal Attraction. Oh my God, did it clean up. I mean, that was a great movie. But remember, Michael Douglas was in Fatal Attraction too. So, I mean, you know, this was great.
Here's how you know there's something for everybody. From the 630, listen to every night. Love the show. I disagree so much on the previous caller. The highlight of my week is Wednesday when Dr. Dingman is on. So that's the thing. There's something for everybody. Now, to what we just did, they said, I also absolutely love his segment. Not so much enamored with what's that from. But I do love anytime you talk political stuff. So there's something for everybody, folks. So everyone just got a little bit. Oh, you guys got a little bit quiet in the studio. Oh,
it's okay.
So what is that?
Yeah, we got pizzas and we got the weather thing, and we're all out of pizzas.
We're all out of pizzas. So thank you from the 630. I will take all of that. There's a little bit something for everybody. When we come back after this break, tell me something good. 312-981-7200. Tell me something good. Oh, wait, before we do that, there is one question, Ken, that I wanted to address from a listener who says, if Trump is so bad, or for everybody, Eric, Dave, Ken, our panel, if Trump is so bad, why is the country doing so good? Jobs, the market, interest rates.
The market is down remarably.
Yeah, like 1,700 points. Enormous number of points. That question implies that the country was bad the day before Trump became president, and suddenly since then it's gotten good. It was doing extremely well prior to Donald Trump taking office. It has continued to do extremely well despite his efforts to hurt the financial markets.
I have two facts. Fact one, today, jobs report for the month of March came out, and it showed that only 101,000 new jobs were created, down dramatically from the previous month and way down below the average. And the second fact is that between Inauguration Day and April 2nd, Barack Obama's stock market grew 37%, Donald Trump's stock market grew 19%, and that was before this week's sell-off.
Yep.
So, yep. Eric, any other thoughts? Nope. got nothing.
I got nothing here.
Got nothing. Look, Roseanne's on TV. More after this on 720 WJIP.
Tell me something good.
Tell me something good, Mr. Dave Lundy.
So one of my dearest friends, Michael Bauer, has been battling cancer. Two different kinds of cancer simultaneously. Oh. And he had surgery, he had radiation. And today he went to the doctor and he got the best news you can get, which is NED, no evidence of disease.
That's
and
great.
It just made my week.
Excellent. That is something good. Eric, you want to share anything?
Yeah, I'm on a pretty good run. Had a great time in Arizona.
Got engaged.
Did that.
Dropped down on one knee.
I did that in Denver last weekend and Cleveland next weekend for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony.
Excellent. Very cool. Ken, you got something for us?
Baseball's here, which means Yay! Warm weather is not too far away. Tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, I will be in a batting cage with my 8-year-old daughter.
That's so fantastic. That nothing
indoor better. Or outdoor?
Indoor tomorrow, not outdoor. She asked the same question. She goes, Daddy, it's not outside, is it? And I said, no, it's indoors.
Because at 11 o'clock tomorrow, yes. I was supposed to be, with Max's first Little League game.
My something good is we gave Declan this sort of like strobing disco wand that he was just overly delighted with tonight. And we turned off all the lights and had our own little disco party at home. Mike, you wanted to chime in with, was it something good or did you want a clarification on something?
No, I just thought it was kind of funny. The guy that was on talking about pronunciations said Lou Malinati.
Oh, Malinati.
Yeah.
There you go. Way to bust a mic.
Nobody caught it.
But you did.
I say Malnati's. I say Lou Malnati's. It's Lou Malinati's?
Yeah, that's what he says. So Lou Malinati.
I try to say it real fast so that nobody knows.
No, Malinati's.
Malinati's. There you go. Have a great weekend, Mike. That was something
Thank
good.
You.
That amused me as
Thank
well. Before we go, Nick, what do you want to tell us? Hey, Nick.
Hey, Patty, I love you.
Ah, thank you so much. You're a good man.
Yeah. Today, I've had my triple play for today, starting the day off.
Uh-huh.
And my good news for you is, get ready, next weekend will be the first 60-degree weather of the year. It's going to be 60 next year.
I'll believe it. Yeah, next year, it seems like. Yeah. I'll believe it when I see it.
It is next year.
From your mouth to God's ears.
That's right.
Hey, I told you yesterday that I went to about my Easter resurrection last weekend.
Right.
my 3 days in the hospital, but don't give me credit for the weather next weekend.
There you go.
I had nothing to do with it.
I gotta run to the next show, Nick. Did you want to tell us anything else?
Well, it's like I told the FBI when they accused me of doing something. I said, show me the pictures or play me the tape.
There you go. I love it.
Otherwise, I deny everything.
I don't blame you. Have a great weekend, Nick. Enjoy your breakfast with your son, okay?
I plan on it. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us pretty late. Roger, I want to say, I don't have a chance to say this, my condolences to you, to your family, your beautiful pooch, Rufus, who has been such a wonderful companion. I know that you've had a rough time, and people who have been following you on Facebook have been reaching out to you. Thank you for sharing. I know a lot of people go through the grief, and it's hard to deal with, but I just want to say thank you for that. I know it's not something good, but there is a strange, beautiful love that comes through from everybody. So I hope you're at least finding that.
I appreciate
some solace.
It. Thank you so much.
And Roger, what are your plans for this weekend?
Working.
There you go.
Waiting for the 60-degree weather so I can go golfing.
Enjoy the it's gonna be a while, Roger.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a while. Matt Papala, I would check in with you, but I can't. The guys can't hear you, and it gets awkward because it looks like I'm talking to myself up here with them. So let me know sometime if you want them to stop by, because they don't mind that sometimes. So anyway, Matt Papala, have a great show.